On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Michael Tomalaris. Coming up, a doubling of power prices in the last decade. But would a clean energy target bring prices down?
A clean energy target involves a subsidy which has to be paid for, which is smeared across all users. So there's pluses and minuses. It's hard to tell.
Also tonight, at least 231 killed after a pair of deadly blasts in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu.
The hospital is overwhelmed by both dead and wounded. We also received people whose limbs were cut away by the bomb.
And we'll have a wrap of the weekend in sport.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. With the news, I'm Mike Tomalaris. Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg has downplayed the Prime Minister's previous comments on a clean energy target, defending the government's approach to tackling Australia's energy woes. Federal Cabinet is expected to decide today, Monday, whether to adopt a clean energy target as part of the government's new energy policy. Malcolm Turnbull has previously said a clean energy target recommended by Chief Scientist Alan Finkel would work, and the government was considering it. Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg says the government will deliver a policy that will balance the need for affordable and reliable electricity while cutting emissions.
When it comes to the clean energy target, that was one of 50 recommendations from the Finkel Review. And we have said we will respond. We will respond to the clean energy target as one of the recommendations. But we've also accepted 49 of the other recommendations. Recommendations which will help deliver lower prices and a more reliable system.
The opposition's energy spokesman Mark Butler says the Prime Minister faces a real test to support the chief scientist or side with Tony Abbott's radical right-wing ideology on climate change. He says rejecting a clean energy target would have severe consequences.
There will be an investment freeze in energy, particularly renewable energy, that will cost thousands of jobs. Reliability in the electricity system will diminish and power prices will continue to go up and up and up for Australian households and business.
Meanwhile, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, the ACCC, has released its preliminary report into the electricity market. It found that huge increases in power bills over the past decade are putting unacceptable pressure on Australian households and businesses. ACCC Chairman Rod Sims says it's unclear if a clean energy target will help bring those prices down.
On the one hand, it might bring more generation into the system. On the other hand, the clean energy target involves a subsidy which has to be paid for, which is smeared across all users. So there's pluses and minuses. It's hard to tell.
The death toll from a bomb blast in Somalia's capital has risen to at least 231, making it the deadliest single attack ever in the African nation. Officials fear the toll will continue to climb from Saturday's truck bomb that targeted a busy street near key ministries in Mogadishu. At least 275 people were injured in the massive explosion, which prompted President Mohamed Abdul Hali Mohamed to declare 3 days of mourning. The United Nations Special Envoy to Somalia, Michael Keating, says the attack happened despite increased attempts to keep the city secure.
Great efforts have been made by the government to particularly secure Mogadishu city, but also other areas in the country. But nevertheless, when one is desperate enough to get through, these kind of things do happen, and we've seen it yet again in Somalia, unfortunately.
Somalia's government has blamed the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab extremist group for the attack it called a national disaster. The United States has urged Iraqi and Kurdish forces to avoid actions that could escalate tensions between the parties and to use dialogue to resolve their differences. Pentagon spokeswoman Laura Seale said the U.S. opposes violence from any party and urged against destabilizing actions that distract from the fight against ISIS and further undermines Iraq's stability. State television has reported that Iraqi forces have taken control of parts of the oil-rich Kirkuk region without opposition from Kurdish Peshmerga fighters. Ms. Seal said the US continues to support a unified Iraq despite the Kurdistan regional government's decision to recently pursue a separatist referendum. In sport, the future of Socceroos coach Ange Postecoglou looks set to remain uncertain for some time to come after Football Federation Australia boss David Gallop failed to end speculation that the Socceroos coach will soon resign. Reports surfaced after the last World Cup qualification game against Syria that Postecoglou would quit after next month's playoff matches against Honduras. But Gallup says he doesn't know what Postecoglou plans to do beyond the Honduras games.
He's indicated he hasn't made any decision, that there's a number of things on his mind. We know that football is fluid in that regard. We've seen that quite recently with the Wanderers and Tony Popovich. So the focus is to concentrate on November. And beyond that, we need to make a decision relatively quickly. But we don't have Socceroos games necessarily until the next window, which is March. So there is a big gap.
And finally, a look at the weather forecast for Tuesday in Perth. Showers increasing a top of 20 degrees. Adelaide sunny and warm, 33. Melbourne sunny, 29 degrees the max. In Hobart, mostly sunny and 26. Canberra sunny, 27 degrees. Wollongong, Sydney and Newcastle partly cloudy. Temperatures around 23 degrees. In Brisbane, showers, 23. Cairns, a possible storm, 29. And Darwin, a possible shower or storm, a top of 34. And Greg, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30.
Thanks, Michael. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 7 past 6. Well, as you heard there in the news, Parliament has returned this week after a four-week break, with Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull entering the new parliamentary sitting with his government slipping in the latest poll. It's going to be a critical week with the unresolved citizenship saga, which still may see him lose his deputy. And as Aileen Phillips reports, the protracted debate over energy policy is expected to come to a head.
The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has delivered its preliminary report examining retail electricity prices to the federal government. It highlights more than a 60% increase to power bills over the past decade, bringing the average bill to more than $1,500, which it says is putting unacceptable pressure on Australian households and businesses. The ACCC found many households could not absorb these increases, especially those on lower incomes, with some people forced to cut spending on food and health to cover their power bills. Similarly, businesses that couldn't pass on higher costs told the Commission they were considering cutting staff or moving overseas, with some even closing. Greens energy spokesman Adam Bandt says the ACCC's called energy companies and the government out over spiralling prices.
The government was serious about bringing down power prices. It would use this report to re-regulate electricity prices in this country and say to the big companies that are operating in the system, this is an essential service. It's not an excuse for you to play the electricity system like a stock market and make obscene profits.
While the report seems to provide further evidence of the woes besetting the energy sector, it hasn't tackled one of the major sticking points, the clean energy target. ACCC Chairman Rod Sims has cautioned the clean energy target, recommended by Chief Scientist Alan Finkel, is designed to cut emissions, but says it was hard to say whether it would also bring down prices. Labor's now worried the government will use these comments to back away from a clean energy target, a move they claim would be a capitulation to Conservative backbenchers, including former Prime Minister Tony Abbott, who's advocating subsidies for coal-fired power. Opposition leader Bill Shorten says the government is at war with itself and that Malcolm Turnbull faces a significant test.
It is a test of whether or not he is running the Liberal Party and can back in what he believes, which is a clean energy target, or if Tony Abbott is running the Liberal Party and they'll dump a clean energy target.
Labor's energy spokesman Mark Butler is warning of severe consequences for the Australian economy.
There will be an investment freeze in energy, particularly renewable energy, that will cost thousands of jobs. Reliability in the electricity system will diminish and power prices will continue to go up and up and up for Australian households and business.
It's understood Federal Cabinet was expected to consider a national energy policy today, which would be presented to the Coalition Party Room in Canberra tomorrow. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull moved to reassure Parliament.
We will deliver a careful energy plan based on engineering and economics, designed to deliver the triple bottom line of affordability, reliability and meeting our international commitments.
Malcolm Turnbull ending that report by Aileen Phillips. sbs.com.au/news. There you'll find all our stories and content. Don't forget, you can now live stream our bulletin at 6:30 each night if you're not near a TV. sbs.com.au/news. Well, passengers on board an AirAsia flight to Bali say they feared for their lives after their plane suddenly lost cabin pressure and plunged 20,000 feet. The budget airline has blamed a technical fault for the mid-air emergency, as Lydia Feng reports.
Passengers travelling to Bali were clinging to each other when their AirAsia plane dropped 20,000 feet without warning. Terrified, they looked to cabin crew for help, but they were left in the dark. Claire Askew, one of the 145 passengers on board, said the reaction of the airline's crew was unacceptable and only exacerbated a tense situation.
The panic was escalated because of the behaviour of staff who were screaming, looked tearful and shocked. Now, I get it, but we looked to them for reassurance and we didn't get any. We were more worried because of how panicked they were.
Flight QZ535 left Perth Airport yesterday, bound for Bali. But just 25 minutes after takeoff, it lost cabin pressure. The pilots then initiated an emergency descent to 10,000 feet. Passengers were told by the cabin crew to get into a brace position and oxygen masks were released. But some masks didn't work.
The oxygen mask dropped out. Quite a few of them didn't work, so there's people reaching over one seat to the other to try and get oxygen masks. I would have expected the cabin crew to be going around as soon as those oxygen masks deployed to make sure that everyone had one. They didn't move out of their seat. They were just like a mess in the back of the plane, so it was pretty disappointing, to tell the truth.
The mid-air emergency left some fearing for their lives.
I picked up my phone and sent a text message to my family, just hoping that they would get it. It was horrible.
All 152 people on board the Airbus A320 returned safely to Perth. Passengers were then rebooked on later flights to Denpasar. In a statement, AirAsia said, "The safety of our guests is our utmost priority. AirAsia Indonesia apologises for any inconvenience caused." It's not the first time the budget airline has been criticised for its performance. In June, the pilot of an AirAsia flight from Perth to Kuala Lumpur told passengers to start praying after an engine malfunctioned and the plane began shaking violently. The Australian Transport Safety Bureau has now launched an investigation into this latest incident. It will release its report after examining the aircraft and voice recorder, as well as interviewing cabin crew.
Lydia Feng with that story. Coming up later in the show, helping people to help themselves.
Government can give you $1 million to fix yourself. Government can give you counsellors, but it's up to you. It's what do you want, you know?
You're listening to SBS World News Radio with Greg Dyett, 13 past 6. Somalia's president has declared 3 days of national mourning after a pair of deadly bomb blasts in the capital Mogadishu. At least 231 people are dead and more than 250 others are injured. No group has claimed responsibility so far for the attacks, the most deadly in the African nation's history. This report from Evan Young.
First, a truck bomb ripped through the heart of Mogadishu's K5 junction, an area lined with government offices, hotels and restaurants. 2 hours later, another blast struck the capital's Medina district. Witnesses say the first blast, which threw up a thick cloud of smoke that could be seen across the city, left scenes of devastation along the busy road.
I've never seen a scene like this ever before. All the buildings around here have collapsed. There were close to 200 people in these buildings. I hope everyone is okay.
The United Nations and the African Union have both pledged their support to the Somali government as police continue to pull bodies from the rubble. Local security sources say medical facilities are struggling to cope with the high influx of patients. The director of the Medina Hospital, Dr. Mohammed Youssef, says the scenes are unprecedented, even in the violence that has hit Somalia previously.
What we have seen is very unusual. The hospital is overwhelmed by both dead and wounded. We also received people whose limbs were cut away by the bomb. This is really horrendous, unlike any other time in the past.
Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed has joined pleas from hospitals for people to donate blood for the victims. He says the country has to work as one to stop such attacks from happening again.
The target of these terrorists is not government officials, but civilians, as you see here. There are no government buildings, only civilians who were going about their daily life. We have to come together and fight these monsters until we eradicate them from our country.
No one has claimed responsibility for the blasts, although analysts say it has the hallmarks of a typical attack by the militant group Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab, with links to Al-Qaeda, often targets high-profile areas in Mogadishu with bombings. Its fighters attacked a military base outside Mogadishu with car bombs and gunfire just last month, killing 8 soldiers. The United Nations Deputy Envoy to Somalia, Michael Keating, has told Al Jazeera, despite what happened, security is improving in the areas affected by the blasts.
Great efforts have been made by the government to particularly secure Mogadishu city, but also other areas in the country. But nevertheless, when one is desperate enough to get through, these kind of things do happen, and we've seen it yet again in Somalia, unfortunately.
Over 2,000 Mogadishu residents have since taken to the streets to protest the attacks, chanting as they marched. The weekend blasts occurred 2 days after Somalia's defense minister and army chief resigned for undisclosed reasons. Somalia is already in the midst of a severe drought as well, and more than 3 million people are threatened by famine because of the food shortages and the violence.
Evan Young on the blasts in Somalia. Coming up, a wrap of all the weekend's sport, including Melbourne City's 2-1 win over Melbourne Victory.
Obviously, it's still early season. It's just 3 points early in the season when, you know, everybody's finding the feet. Anyway, you know, the biggest thing for me tonight was to come here and not be bullied.
But to Austria now, where election results suggest anti-immigrant candidate Sebastian Kurz is likely to become the country's next leader. If that's the case, he'd become the youngest political leader in Europe at only 31 years old. Matt Kennellan has the details.
Sebastian Kurz is nicknamed Wunderwizi. Roughly translated, it means someone who can walk on water. And at the age of only 31, Mr. Kurz appears likely to become Austria's next leader and the youngest political leader in all of Europe. The anti-immigration candidate says the people of Austria have given him a mandate.
Wählerinnen und Wählern eine...
Today the voters, men and women in this country, gave us a great mandate. We must be aware of this opportunity. The women and men are putting their hopes into this movement. We will use all our strength and all of our fight to bring about change in this country. I invite you to go on this path with us. There is much to do to establish a new style, new culture of politics in this country.
Mr. Kurz was Europe's youngest ever foreign minister when he was appointed in 2013 at the age of 27. In May, he was appointed leader of the People's Party. It looks set to win more than 31% of the vote, ahead of the Social Democrats with 27% and the Freedom Party, also anti-immigration, with almost 26%. That's well short of a majority, which means Mr. Kurz will be forced to form a coalition. And with the People's Party at loggerheads with the Social Democrats, it appears most likely a coalition will be formed with the Freedom Party. That party would be entering government for the first time in a decade. Freedom Party leader Heinz Christian Strach says the result shows the people of Austria want change.
At first, it is important to wait for the official results and not to start speculating about coalitions. But one thing I can tell you, the Freedom Party remains true to themselves and to Austrians, and therefore it is crucial to introduce the direct democracy of Switzerland here.
That report by Matt Kennellan. Police appear to have gained the upper hand on the Apex Gang, founded in Melbourne's South Sudanese community. But the community's issue with youth crime isn't gone. One academic says what he calls information has been overlooked as a method of breaking the cycle and providing effective settlement policy. Luke Waters has the story.
Buck Deng is the first to admit he took the wrong path after arriving in Australia when he was 15 years old. He says it was a grueling trade as a roof tiler that helped him finally establish a functional life in Australia, prompted by a brief trip back to South Sudan.
Used to hang around too much, drinking and doing nothing well after when I dropped out of school and I didn't have nothing to do. So we're going back home. My mom had to do some wedding for my brother back at home, so we had to go. So when I went there after 10 years, I haven't seen the family and I haven't seen where I should be living or where I belong. I started realizing I was just wasting my life here doing nothing.
The rap musician Wal Riak, who goes by the name Crown in his music, also landed in trouble after arriving in Australia as a teenager. He says it was a now promising career as a hip-hop artist that gave him a much-needed alternative.
Speaking of like what it done to my life, is it saved me pretty much, because I was going on a route where it was like a route where there was no limit, and the only limit to that route was either you're dying or your life is messed up. And music for me just came as like a way that was telling me you're actually worth it, you know? You're not worth going to jail, you're not worth dying.
Like many young men arriving from South Sudan, there are similarities in Buck Deng and Wal Riak's stories. Their fathers were killed in the country's civil war. Both teenagers arrived with few language or social skills and quickly fell into a pattern of petty crime. Both men escaped the cycle, but effectively stumbled into a solution. Buck Deng says he benefited from advice and the discipline of a trade.
It was a really hard one from the start because I was doing it as an apprentice. You started from the ground and works get harder and harder every day. But when you get up there and you tell yourself every day you got to get there, you got to get there, everything gets easier and easier. Now I'm qualified and I can't complain. I couldn't imagine one day I would do the 4 years really, but I done it.
Wal Riak says his redemption came from within.
Government can give you $1 million to fix yourself. Government can give you counsellors, but it's up to you. It's what do you want, you know? And so what I ask for these young people is look inside yourself and ask, like, what do you want to do? You want to play football? You want to play soccer? Go chase it. Train by yourself if you have to.
Dr. Burhan Ahmed in Melbourne collates statistics on the challenges of African settlement in Australia. He says new arrivals deserve more direction from their host country. He's calling for a dedicated centre to review data and provide informed settlement policy and solutions.
What I see is this needs real review in how we deal with this, how we support these young people at school, in the street, in employment. African Study Centre, that brings our this community's information into the surface, into people's access. Settlements need to be more advanced, fitting 21st century Australia.
Victoria's Minister for Multicultural Affairs, Robin Scott, says he favours the concept.
For government, that's something we're very considering very carefully, because there is the opportunity that's emerging to collate data much more efficiently.
Victoria's Minister for Multicultural Affairs, Robin Scott, ending that report by Luke Waters. Well, summer just around the corner. Fans are starting to prepare themselves for some of the year's biggest sporting events, with cricket's Ashes series beginning next month and the Rugby League World Cup later this month. There's still plenty to keep fans entertained in the meantime, though, with football, the start of the local basketball season, and horse racing's newest big thing. Here's Sunila Wasti.
Many will tell you there's nothing like beating your older sibling. And in football this weekend, that's a thrill that went to Melbourne City in the A-League after they beat Melbourne Victory 2-1. On the field, derbies between Melbourne City and Melbourne Victory have been pretty even. Victory have now won 10 games, City 9, with 5 draws. But there's a continuing feeling that Melbourne City, despite their being backed by the billion-dollar Manchester City global footballing empire, is the junior partner in the Victorian capital to Victory, an A-League foundation club. It's a sentiment new Melbourne City coach Warren Joyce seems very keen to overcome.
Obviously, it's still early season. It's just 3 points early in the season when, you know, everybody's finding the feet anyway. You know, the biggest thing for me tonight was to come here and not be bullied.
In England, an even fiercer pair of rivals met in the Premier League when Manchester United played Liverpool. A nil-all draw meant neither of them suffered the indignity of losing to the other. No escape from indignity for Arsenal, though. Not only did they suffer an unexpected 2-1 defeat to Watford, Watford's first goal came from a controversially awarded penalty. Arsenal manager Arsene Wenger, far from the usual managerial circumspection in his criticism of the call.
I think it was a scandalous decision to give a penalty like that. I've seen it again on replay. It's difficult to understand.
Manchester City lead the Premier League after 8 rounds, after a 7-2 thumping of Stoke. Not quite at Manchester City levels yet, the Sydney Kings in the National Basketball League. After losing their first 2 games of the season, the Kings picked up their first win this past weekend, 103-87 over the Illawarra Hawks. American import Perry Ellis starred, scoring 33 of those Kings points. He says the team has already improved.
Look, we were just so close. We were so close to being a great team, you know, and we're starting to figure that out. We saw on tape what we needed to work on, and we did really well tonight.
And Randwick Racecourse in Sydney has seen the debut of the latest event to carry the title of the world's richest thoroughbred horse race on turf. The inaugural winner of the race, known as the Everest, a horse by the name of Redzel, ridden by the defending Melbourne Cup-winning jockey, Kerryn McAvoy. McAvoy telling Channel 7 the triumph was a product of luck as well as skill.
You know, this horse had drawn a good gate. There was so many scenarios going through our heads as to how it was going to work out, but it couldn't have worked out any better in the run. We just had a dream run outside the leader and... yeah, I'm over the moon.
Over the moon too, the horse's 17 part owners. They include a taxi driver, an electrician and a concreter, as well as teachers and police officers.
Samila Wasti with that look at sport. Time now to check the news headlines. And energy has dominated federal parliament today, with federal cabinet expected to decide whether to adopt a clean energy target as part of the government's new energy policy. State television has reported that Iraqi forces have taken control of parts of the oil-rich Kirkuk region without opposition from local Kurdish Peshmerga fighters. And the future of Ange Postecoglou looks set to remain uncertain until at least November, with Football Federation Australia boss David Gallop failing to end speculation that the Socceroos coach will not continue beyond the World Cup qualifiers next month. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see SBS World News on TV at 6:30. And don't forget, you can also live stream the news on our website at sbs.com.au/news. You can also get our content in your Facebook newsfeed, just like our page, SBS World News. Also follow us on Twitter at SBS News is the Twitter handle. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.